We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different. This is Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Athens, Illinois. And at my right hand, I have
Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from the snow-swept streets of South St. Louis, Ascension Lutheran Church.
And I think people should note that we have actually driven through what must have been like 4 or 5 foot of snow so we could be here and record Wrestling with the Basics with you.
Anything for our listeners.
Anything for our listeners. And in fact, however, I was, you didn't do this. You should have thought about this. Here, say hi.
Hi.
Well, you should probably introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Lynn Lukowski, principal of Emmanuel Lutheran School in Oakville, Illinois.
And whenever I go out in the snow, I always bring my wife with me in case I need to have someone shovel me out. So
You bring the muscle.
I bring the muscle.
I'm actually better at pushing the car out of the snow than I am at shoveling.
But she does both things rather well.
And you're kind enough to stay inside and keep the car nice and toasty.
That's right. So when she gets back done. Exactly. But anyway, thank you. Lynn's with us because it's kind of a marathon day for us because we did the Bible study, Thy Strong Word. Matt and I are now recording Wrestling with the Basics. And from here, we're going to do Concord Matters, which is a show they have every Tuesday afternoon from 2 to 3.
Yeah.
So
you guys are just showing off now. Sheesh.
It shows how desperate the radio station has become.
I didn't want to say it, but perhaps
so. Anything you want to say before we jump in with both feet? We have some exciting material planned for you today and next Saturday. Anything you want to tell us? Anything going on there at Ascension?
As we record this, it's only 2 more days until Ted Drew's reopens.
Oh, my goodness.
So I just wanted to share that. So
I am
rather excited. So I was considering camping out this year so I could be first in line. But we will see. So, last year I went on opening day. They gave me a free magnet. So we'll
really?
See.
Yeah. Really? Well, that's pretty exciting.
It is for me.
It is.
It's the little things in my life, John. Okay. Sorry.
You want to make Matt happy? Just give him a magnet.
Just give me a magnet.
He'll be just as happy as a little puppy.
All right. It doesn't take much.
Well, you know, there was something inside. I need to ask Matt because I know there's something special. I mean, and of course, Ted Drews is reopening. We actually had friends that came all the way from I don't know where, from Nebraska or something, and went to Ted Drews and they were closed.
Oh, ouch. So,
I did not realize that they do close for a certain point of time.
My brother-in-law is getting married, and he wanted very much to go to Ted Drews. He's getting married on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
After the ceremony, because that's what we did. So when Lisa and I got married, after our wedding, we went to Ted Drews.
Huh?
And if you go to Ted Drews in your wedding garb, they give you a free custard. So that's something to keep in mind.
That is. Hey, you still got your wedding dress, don't you? Let's go down and get some free ice cream. Weren't you here just last week?
It was a different lady.
No. We just love it. Would they do it for a renewal of vows, too, you think?
I don't know. You'd have to ask.
I think that's probably as long as you're dressed, you would get it. So, Matt, tell us what we're going to do. Matt came up with this wonderful idea for what we want to do.
Well, today is sort of a time of transition in the church here.
Yes.
Really, we're kind of on the verge here of Lent. But before that, we have the season of Epiphany, of course. So we've been in the season of Epiphany, which was pretty short this year. Actually, that's that time in between Christmas and Lent. Only about 4 weeks. What, 4 or 5 weekends?
Yep.
I guess this year.
It was very short.
Easter comes early this year, of course.
That's Sunday in March.
Exactly. So that bumps everything up, including Ash Wednesday, then the beginning of Lent. And so we're sort of at this transition time where we're moving from that season of light, we might call it, an epiphany. And that account of Jesus' transfiguration that sort of serves as the capstone for that season. And then, of course, then the first weekend of Lent, which then begins this time of of repentance, a time of turning from our sin to Christ for salvation, for forgiveness. And one of those key accounts that are usually read during that season of Lent is Jesus' temptation in the wilderness, those 40 days in the wilderness, and we now enter those 40 days of Lent. So this week and then next Saturday too, we'll be looking at these two texts that kind of helped to transition us from that time of Epiphany then to that season of Lent.
All right. So that's what we're doing, the two big stories, the one that is the big story of Epiphany and the other the big story of Lent. As we, I understand people right now. You say, "Well, don't they understand? We're already a couple weeks into Lent."
Yeah.
This is the world of time travel that Matt and I live in. That we're recording this way before these things are ever broadcast. So just bear with us, would you?
Okay. Give us a break.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Transfiguration. Then it is. And is it all right, Matt? Because we could have done Matthew. We could have done who else? Everybody? Does everybody have the Transfiguration? Matthew has it.
Yeah, there's the synoptics. I'd have to check.
Yeah.
Don't
worry about it. People want us to talk.
They can look it up themselves.
Look it up themselves.
Give them something to do.
We're going to do Luke. We're going to do Luke anyway. I've arbitrarily chosen Luke. You want me to? And Lynn, could you? Lynn's like right behind me, and she might be making rabbit ears over my head or something. Will your headphones reach as you can be right here? Then I can easily hand you.
She keeps shaking
this
shovel at you.
I know. Well, really, sweetheart, it wasn't that much snow. Anyway, I'll start reading. Does that work for you, babe? Okay. Now, about eight...
Oh, you were talking to Lynn. I'm sorry. That threw me off. He's going to call me babe.
Sorry. That's right. It's okay, sweetie. Now, about 8 days after these sayings, he, that is Jesus, took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. Anything about that, or you want me to keep reading there, Matt?
Well, it's that same inner circle we always hear about, right? Those representatives of the disciples at large, Peter, James, and John. So, going on the mountain and kind of interesting.
All the time, Peter, James, and John.
And the purpose here, I think, is sort of interesting, to pray.
Yes. Yeah. Unique detail of the Gospel of Luke.
Yeah, and we kind of overlook that sometimes. Another example of Jesus going off to pray. Jesus is going off to pray all the time when you read through the Gospels.
Especially Luke.
Especially Luke.
Loves to talk
Isn't
about
that interesting?
Jesus praying. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Is that better?
Yeah. That's...
Okay. We should explain. It's a little crowded in here. You know, we have our own studio for Wrestling with the Basics, but for some reason, they always are storing mops and other cleaning chemicals in here. I'm not sure why. So now that we got Lynn in here, it's really, really tight. Oh, go ahead.
No, that about covers it, I think. You know, okay. They're going up the mountain. They're going to pray, Peter, James, and John.
All right. I'll keep reading.
And then something unexpected happens, at least unexpected to the disciples.
Yes. Yeah. And as he was praying, so again, an emphasis on prayer, the appearance of his face was altered and his clothing became dazzling white. And behold, two men were talking with him, Moses and Elijah, who appeared in glory and spoke of his departure, literally in the Greek Exodus, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. All right. What about that?
Well, here there are these, a lot of remarkable things. So Peter, James, and John, I'm sure just, you know, taken aback here. Jesus' face alter, his clothing dazzling white. And not only that, but then you have these two individuals from the Old Testament scriptures, Moses and Elijah.
Why Moses and Elijah?
Well, you know.
Why not Jeremiah and Joshua?
Sure. Good question. Well, you know, I think we probably, our listeners probably know more about Moses than Elijah, perhaps.
Yes.
He's kind of becomes this icon in our pop culture. He's in, Moses, Prince of Egypt, the animated movie. We've got the Ten Commandments, the Cecil B. DeMille one. We've got the History of the World Part One, thanks to Mel Brooks. Not all that accurate, perhaps, but Moses makes an appearance. And then, of course, we have the scriptures.
Don't forget the scriptures.
Yeah, that too. Right.
He's a pretty big guy.
Good material
too. Yeah.
So Moses. I mean, we could say a lot of different things about Moses. You mentioned an Exodus. This Moses, of course, is familiar with an Exodus, right? We think of Moses as
that's a Moses word.
God's instrument to bring the people out of slavery in Egypt, the Israelites. God works through him to bring that about. After those 10 plagues, they come out of Egypt and cross the Red Sea, and then after that. That what happens? They come to Mount Sinai, and the people receive the law. God gives that law, that written law, the Ten Commandments, to Moses. So oftentimes we think of, we could think of Moses a lot of different things, but we could think of him as representing the law. He's sort of the face of the law. When you think of the law, you think of Moses. So the law in terms of the Ten Commandments,
okay.
You know, love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself. But then also, you know, in a broader sense, that law of the Torah.
The Torah, yes.
That type of, that section of writings in the Old Testament scriptures, first five books of the Bible that Moses writes by inspiration of the Holy Spirit, the face of the law.
And can I share with you what the last chapter of that five great books that start the Old Testament, it says, "And there has not arisen a prophet since in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, none like him for all the signs and the wonders that the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land, and for all the mighty power and all the great deeds of terror that Moses did in the sight of all Israel." So you're right. He's the summary of the law, and he's the biggest prophet there was. You don't get any bigger than Moses when it comes to the Old Testament.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. Sort of iconic almost, yeah. You know, that he represents the law. And boy, well, what a thing to be said of someone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So what about Elijah? What's he in there?
Well, Elijah, he comes along about 600 years later, 600 okay. years after Moses. And Elijah, well, maybe we don't know quite as much about the guy. I mean, you know, he's in the Bible, of course. I point out Moses, that's good.
You know, but they didn't know any. Cecil B. DeMille didn't
yeah,
do any movies.
No,
about
no major motion yeah, pictures about okay. Elijah's life, at least
somebody's
that I'm aware of.
There.
Yeah, I know okay. there's some good material.
Yeah.
But a very significant prophet, certainly, in the life of Israel, in the history of the Israelites. And we think of the times he called Israel to repentance, but also, you know, the big showdown on another mountain, Mount Carmel, between the prophets of Baal, that false god, and then the one true God, of course. And remember, the one true God is the one who sends fire to consume the altar and sacrifice. So which altar is he going to consume? Is it going to be Baal? Is he going to consume his altar, or is Yahweh, the Lord, going to consume his altar? And of course, no surprise, the one true God, Yahweh, consumes it. And Elijah's
consumes both of them, doesn't he? Doesn't he consume both altars, both his altar and the altar of
well,
the
I think it's
Baal?
Just the one, but it's...
Is it?
I think
Lynn,
it's just
one.
It's soaked with water, though, and...
Just the one. Okay, I'm sorry. It's a good thing we have Lynn here.
It's always good to have Lynn here.
On the right track, yeah.
So, you know, in a way, he represents the prophets.
Okay,
he's
yes.
one of many Old Testament prophets, but certainly one of those key prophets. And you know, even Elijah even associated with the coming of the Messiah.
Yes.
You know, at Jesus' crucifixion, what do the people say? Listen, he's calling Elijah. You know.
Yes, yes.
So,
and they think that maybe he is Elijah.
Yeah.
Come back from the dead.
Maybe it even is Elijah.
Yes, yeah.
So, but it isn't. Jesus Christ is not Elijah because, you know, of course, Jesus is God. But then also, well, here they're together. Here's Elijah and Jesus. But, you know, sort of the face of the prophets in many ways. One of those many prophets of old who spoke the word of God, who spoke for God.
So what we have, and this is the Old Testament way of talking, the law and the prophets. When it's talking about the entirety of the Old Testament scriptures, that's the phrase, the law and the prophets. And so we got both of those guys here, Moses for the law, Elijah for the prophets.
Yeah, so you know, I got my Hebrew Old Testament scriptures in my office back at Ascension. And you know, on the cover, on the one side, it says it's Hebrew's word, and it's the law, the prophets, and the writings. So really, kind of the
yes.
whole Old Testament scriptures,
yeah,
like
yeah.
you pointed out, is really kind of summarized by the law and the prophets.
Now, Lynn is actually busily doing research to find out whether it was just one altar or both that were consumed in the big battle of Mount Carmel. But Lynn, I feel so bad you're not saying anything. Would you like to tell the listeners what's unique about the death of these two guys, which might be another reason why they show up on the mountain?
All right, well, putting me on the spot here. Moses went up to the top of a mountain, and he got to see the promised land, and then the Lord let him die, and then the Lord buried him, and nobody knows where his body was buried. And then for Elijah, he and his understudy, Elisha, were taking this trip to where Elijah would no longer be on earth, and Elisha asked for Elijah's power sevenfold, and he said, that won't happen unless you see me go to heaven. And eventually they get across this river, and God has taken Elijah up in a whirlwind as chariots of fire go between Elijah and Elisha.
So thank you. And see, you can do that with my wife. Don't ever do that with me, Matt. But she, no, seriously, this lady, she faithfully reads the Bible day in and day out. And thank you, because see, I always thought that Elijah was taken up in a fiery chariot. But no, he's taken up in a whirlwind. There just happens to be a chariot there in case someone needed one, I guess. I don't know. It was like an Uber deal. I have no idea.
Uber deal. You can see why this might make for a good movie, though.
It would. Yeah. It would be great. So anyway, so it's an impressive thing. By the way, here's the question. How did they know it was Moses and Elijah? Did they have like little name tags?
Hello, my name is.
Yeah. What's that all about?
Well, that's a good question. You know, they're conversing here. Maybe they're listening in on what they're saying. Oh, okay. And Jesus is calling him Moses and Elijah. You know, but they seem to just know. And I think this gives me sometimes people I say, Pastor, you know, are we going to know each other in heaven? In heaven, are we going to, you know, recognize each other?
Yes,
this is one example where I would tend to say, well, probably so. You know, you know, they knew these guys were Moses and Elijah. And in heaven, we'll know each other. Our relationships will be different, right? You know, we're not married or given in marriage, of course. But, yeah, I think we'll know each other as God's creation still now in his presence.
Yeah, and it's funny because that's the same way I've used this text to answer that question. I think we will be recognizable. It's interesting that Luther's theory was that at your prime, whatever was your prime, that's the way you'll be in heaven. So you won't be little baby Matt, even if you die as a little child. You won't be little child, but whatever you would have been when you had reached your maturity, not like I am now where, you know, I'm starting to lose the hair and the hearing's going, but whatever it was when we were at our prime, that's the way we'll be. And I think that's probably a good way of picturing it, although we'll find out when we get to heaven.
So you're saying I'll be exactly like I am right now,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Thank you, Matt. That's exactly. You will be as you are at your prime right now. By the way, and thank you for reminding us, maybe they knew who they were because of their discussion, which was about the departure. Another detail that is unique about Luke, that they were talking about the fact that Jesus is going to Jerusalem to suffer and die and maybe also rise again. Because, by the way, that's how it begins. Now, after 8 days, after these sayings, that's how the story started. And that, of course, is the sayings that come immediately before the transfiguration. Jesus both saying that he is going to go to Jerusalem and be turned over to the hands of sinful men and suffer and die. And also pointing out to the disciples that they also will have to take up their cross and follow him. What did you find out, Lynn?
He and I were right.
Okay.
Just the one.
Like it was going to be anything different. Like she's never... always right. Okay.
But I think you had a really good insight, John. You mentioned earlier that they're speaking of Jesus' departure. We get to listen in on this divine conversation, which is kind of cool. But that word departure, as you pointed out, is the same word used for exodus.
Exodus, yeah.
And how neat, you know, have Moses, the leader of that Old Testament exodus there, but then Jesus preparing to lead this greater of exoduses, that exodus for us, that he accomplishes on yet another mountain, Mount Calvary, at the cross, where he leads us out of the slavery of sin, out of the slavery of death, into that ultimate promised land of heaven itself.
And you get the impression that maybe this Old Testament thing was actually pointing ahead to Jesus. It's just a guess, you know, but
it seems like it.
It seems like those things just keep popping up in the
most
story
definitely.
Of Jesus. All right, now on to my favorite part of the story, because I identify heavily with Peter. Now, Peter and those who were with him were heavy with sleep, so I identify with that right off. Man, people, I tell you what, you don't know how hard it is for me to stay awake during the middle of a church service. Oh, boy. Man, if I wasn't preaching, I'd be taking a nap.
That's why the Lord led you to be a pastor, to keep you awake.
And honest to God, I think it is. Okay, but when they became fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. And as the men were parting from him, Peter said to Jesus, Master, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah, not knowing what he said. What do you think, Matt?
Well, you know, I think, well, obviously, Peter doesn't know what he's saying. It seems to me like It seems to me like he's trying to prolong this experience, though.
Of course, it is good to be
here. He's put it to his good Lord to be here as we sing the hymn and to put up three tents here. He doesn't know what to say, but wants to prolong this mountaintop experience. But the fact of the matter is, it is just that. It is a temporary mountaintop experience. And this exodus has to take place. Jesus has to come down off the mountain. And whether Peter knows it or not, he's sort of getting in the way of the reason why Jesus has come in the first place to continue that journey to Mount Calvary.
You know, it's interesting. Peter does a lot of stupid things. One, you just alluded to, Jesus says, I have to suffer and die. And he explicitly says, no, that'll never happen to you. You know, he tries to walk on water. Of course, he says he's going to remain with Jesus, whether he go to prison or die, and then denies him. What always struck me as interesting, and in all those other instances where Jesus does the stupid thing, which, by the way, that's my goal. Every goal, I want to do something stupid each day. Because that's I want to have a goal I can accomplish. But anyway.
You're setting the bar pretty high there, aren't you?
That's right. Every day. One stupid thing at least. But all those other instances, Jesus rebukes him. Even to that one, you know, saying, get behind me, Satan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But it struck me, he doesn't rebuke him. He doesn't rebuke him for what he says here. Because it's a good thought, right? We want to be with Jesus in glory. That is the plan. But thank you for pointing out, we don't want to be with Jesus temporarily in glory. Not in some tent, you know, that you set up and you take down every night. But we want to be in the mansions. That's what Jesus says. He wants to give us a permanent place of dwelling. So you're right. He really doesn't know what he's talking about. And what I really like what you said, Matt, because I hadn't thought of that angle, if they did what Peter wanted, the whole plan would be set aside, wouldn't it? Because the plan is not to stay on the mountain. The plan is to come down and to suffer and die and give his life for the sins of the world. So while it seems like a good idea to let the glory continue, no, that would actually prevent the eternal glory
exactly.
that Christ is trying to plan.
So. That eternal mountaintop experience, Mount Zion, you know, the heavenly Jerusalem, that's ours forever and ever. Jesus has to come down off this mountain to make that permanent mountaintop possible for us.
And is it possible that maybe we have to come down from the mountain of glory, that we also have to, well, that's what he said, didn't he? Take up your cross and follow him. That maybe our sufferings and our struggles are all part of that plan too, that we might have these eternal glories in the future. That it's not just a fluke or accident that we all have the crosses we have, but maybe that's part of God disciplining us, part of God preparing us, part of God strengthening our faith that we might have the eternal things he wants to give us too.
And I love that one hymn, "'Tis Good Lord to Be Here," that's four there's not a whole lot of transfiguration hymns out there. But the one of them with the final stanza says, but if we must leave the mount, come with us to the plain. Yeah. And kind of this picture of even worship being a mountaintop experience where Jesus himself is there. But yet even we leave there, but come with us, Lord, in our everyday life and just in the ebb and flow of where we're at, where he's placed us, be with us, abide with us. Even though we may not see you, we know you're there.
Let me wrap this text up with these very beautiful words that close the text. And as the men were parting from him, and as he was saying these foolish things, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were afraid as they entered the cloud. And a voice came out of the cloud saying, this is my son, my chosen one, listen to him. And when the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent and told no one these days of what had been taking place. And Matt signaled because it's time to close. Can we pick up with those verses then when we come back next week?
That'll be a great transition as we transition again from that apex of epiphany here with the transfiguration and move on to the season of Lent.
All right. So blessings. Thank you for being with us, Lynn. We look forward to hearing or seeing you or whatever we're doing next week.